What's going on? I love having awesome conversations with awesome people. And today I'm going to introduce you to an amazing human being, Rachel Bendler. And she, you may know her, you may not. That's okay, because you're going to learn now. She's spent 9 years in the Air Force as an officer, Academy grad, learned all the fun things there. But one thing I love about Rachel is her passion for human beings and designing things that are best used for humans in different scenarios. So welcome, Rachel. How are you?
I'm doing so well. I'm so excited. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have you. We've interacted before. And I actually am calling you Rachel this time, not Matt. Because you were on that show with us. There was all three Matts and you.
So many Matts. I appreciate it. I am an honorary Matt, though.
But
I am honored about.
Yes, but we don't want to hear about honorary Matt. We want to hear about Rachel today. So that's the goal. So, Rachel, why don't you start it off? Can you tell us your journey? I mentioned that you're an Academy grad, but tell us your journey and how you got to where you are now.
Yes, I graduated from the Air Force Academy in 2014. I started out my Air Force career as a contracting officer in Germany, getting to learn just about smaller acquisitions and just all how somebody, if somebody wants something, how they go about getting that in the Air Force. And then after that, I started my acquisitions career at Hanscom Air Force Base, right outside Boston. Started as that young lieutenant, just learning about acquisitions, not really getting to do too much, but in charge of those big million-dollar, billion-dollar programs, as my OPR says. But just really leading a small team, trying to do whatever I could to help my program, keep morale high in the office, things like that. And then I heard about this cool thing that started up downtown in Boston, where people were coding. And they were out of uniform. And I thought, okay, this could be interesting. Do I want to be a coder? And for a second, I thought about it and then thought, no, that's not me. I'm not the technical person. I'm the people person. I'm the fuzzy person. We used to call our the non-technical majors at the Academy fuzzy majors. I'm the fuzzy person, like as fuzzy as they get. And I still reached out to somebody just to learn about it because I thought it sounded cool. And then I found out about a positions called designers. I'd never heard of them before. I was in a world of engineering and managing engineers. And then when I learned about design, it just clicked for me. Like one of those moments where, whoa, this is a thing. This is real. People do this as a job. They have a career in this. That sounds amazing. And then I applied, I got accepted, and Kessel Run was where I ended up. And then after that, I really just dove in to understanding more about the world of design, about user-centered design and design practices. Really found a passion for leading and helping the other designers at Kessel Run in their careers and just in their teams to just try and make sure everybody had what they needed and could try and solve problems in a creative way and everybody else could just get out of their way. And then stayed there for a good amount of time and got lucky to take another assignment, which would have been my last assignment at another software factory for the Space Force. Got to live out a little California dream, get to learn about space. And then now I'm in the process of transitioning out of the Air Force, going into the reserves, but looking for my next chapter.
That's so cool. There's so many fun stories I'm going to ask you about in all of that. But I want to start out with, when I first found that UX, human centered design, I couldn't get enough of it. And I want to know your journey through that, because I think that's similar.
Yeah, no, when I said like it was an aha moment, I feel everything I'd seen up to that point was we have this list of things and someone somewhere has figured it out. They've made it perfect. We know, we must know. And so we're going to develop towards it, or we're going to build towards it. And we've got our teams of engineers and they're making sure we're checking off checklists and certifications. And when I found out about this whole career field that actually like put the user out there, put them first, tried to figure out, okay, maybe we can do our background. We can learn about these certifications. We can learn about these checklists that we need to know about, but maybe we learn about this space and then we figure out one piece of it to try and deliver to you. But then how do we decide on what that one piece is? Oh, maybe it's something that really will solve a problem for you, because when we deliver this big system, we're solving a ton of problems. We don't even know which one we're really prioritizing. And I feel like it was just the aspect of trying to understand what could be important to that person. what could really make a massive difference in their day-to-day. And sometimes I think people think about user-centered design as sometimes a user-driven design. Like, we're just going to make UCD or is just deciding to build whatever the user tells them to build. But it's really understanding the person, like taking them like they're your best friend and you want the best for your best friend. Like, you want them to have the best thing in the world. You want them to love their job. You want them to love whatever tools they're using. That's how I look at user-centered design. It's not just giving them what they want, but it's giving them what they need. And sometimes, just like everybody, you don't know what you need all the time. But somebody who can really understand the psychology of like how the human brain works, understand the user and like what their environment is and the job that they have to do, the factors that they have to consider in doing their job, that helps you make really good user-centered design decisions. And then just add the design thinking process on it. And we relabeled the scientific process and just made it for user-centered design. Then it's just beautiful. It works. And it takes some time and it takes some people that are trained in it, but it's just amazing to me.
And you've had a unique opportunity to be in this role, learn this role, grow in this role as an Air Force officer, which I don't think is common. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, this isn't like your actual job in the Air Force, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And partly the reason why I'm at part of the journey that I'm at now, but I used to say I am an active duty Air Force officer and I'm a designer, but I'm one of the few because design is not a career field in the Air Force. So I'm an acquisitions officer. I'm a program manager. I'm a product manager. I'm a manager. I'm a leader as an officer. We're not looked at to do some of this stuff, to really go and research these things ourselves. We just receive the requirements. We receive the lists of things. So it was definitely a big change for me to be able to go and do that and dig in. But even I think it also made me realize, looking back, just knowing how different organizations, they work differently between the Air Force, Space Force. Design looked a little bit different, but it made me realize that you don't really have to have the role of a designer to ask some of these questions and to really dig in. So I think that's maybe like a nice thing looking back, realizing maybe I was a designer the whole time and it's okay if I didn't have the title or the role the whole time.
You mean you don't have to have a certificate to ask questions?
Apparently not. Sometimes a clearance, but no certificate or badge. Yes.
Oh, I absolutely love that. And I know it's accepted in the world that you've been in, the software factories, being in design, but how is it taken when you're working with these different people and you're like actually building things for them, something they're probably not used to?
Not at all. I think it's been my favorite thing in the world to go see a user in my uniform, the uniform that they wear, and ask them questions about things and talk to them about this kind of make believe, like sometimes mythical thing that they've heard about that the acquisition community is working on for them. They don't usually get to really interact with people from the acquisition side or the program office. So when they do, you see it in them that they're okay. First, there might be some apprehension because they've heard about it. Probably historically we're late or it hasn't been delivered, or maybe it failed in the past and you're that person that's wearing all of that baggage. So there's a little apprehension at first, but then they realize, wait, you're leveling with me. You're talking with me. You're asking me questions that I might not have been asked before. You're giving me an update like I've never seen one before. Okay, maybe we can work together. And then when it's done in a good, positive way, it suddenly becomes this teaming effort that we've unlocked something that acquisitions and the operator can work together. And when they do that, good things can happen. It's interesting, but it feels easy. Like, it's a no-brainer. Like, we should have been doing this the whole time. But in some cases, people still aren't. There's definitely probably lots of program offices that are still not necessarily engaging with their operators on a regular cadence.
Yeah, well, from my experience, it's been you get in that run or that rut of, I have to deliver, I have to do this thing. Oh, hey, I know what they want. I've been there. I've been in their shoes. Their shoes are different than your shoes. So I'm sure you've seen a lot of, sometimes it's hard to, for all I ask different questions, How hard is it, have you seen, for people to pull themselves out of the situation? Or do you not do that too, so that you don't influence what they're trying to do?
Oh, so hard. And maybe some of it is because of how long some of these programs have been around. And we need people who are absolute experts in some of these things. Like, there are details, minutiae of specific domains and missions that I could never understand in my tenure of maybe 2 or 3 years on a program. So we need people who have that SME knowledge. And some of them also were prior users, but they're not necessarily current users. And they're not the people who we're maybe delivering to right now. So I think there is, I've seen in ways when we've been able to be on teams together, there, if there's some understanding of, hey, we're going to try this approach, we're going to try and use our knowledge, but we're going to try and keep our knowledge back here when we're researching and when we're testing so that we can look and see what we learn. I think everyone can respect an experiment. And so I think it's easier to just tackle those types of interactions like event by event, rather than we're going to change this whole program, all the rules, we're going to upheave everything, we're going to need you to stop, change something about yourself that you've probably been doing for 20 years. No, they're probably not going to do that. And it's probably going to just cause tension. And everyone's going to have an opinion, and maybe feelings are going to be hurt. People aren't going to feel like you're going to want to work with them. But if it's just, oh, hey, on this interview, let's just let them answer the question. In this test, let's just see. Let's not explain it to them. If they ask what that's for, let's not explain it. Let's just see what they say. And then afterward, let's talk about it. Why did they think that? Because what you're telling me is different. So why do you think they don't know that? And then let's talk about those questions. And I feel like when that's experienced at a team together, they slowly start to learn about user-centered design without realizing that they're learning about user-centered design.
Yeah, I'm sure you have to go in carefully, because you can't go in and tell them what they're doing is right or wrong. You have to be there and listen, I would assume, right?
Yeah, and even everyone has something to learn. Even if someone has a lot of good experience in trying to have teams work together in more of a design thinking way, even then, there's definitely something to learn about maybe the environment or the stakeholders or the domain, about these types of users, than others who have been there before, maybe are thinking in different methodologies, have been developing differently or building differently. I feel like there's always something that somebody else knows that can be shared and used to the advantage of the team, if everybody is open to that.
Yeah, it is open. I'm sure that, what do you do when people aren't open to that?
Oh, that is, I feel like the probably most common, maybe common challenge. And I think when you said that, like, you don't want to go in and tell people they're wrong, or what they're thinking or what they're doing is wrong, is so important there. So I feel like it starts with how you enter the space. You have to enter the space in a respectful way to the people who were there before you. And I think when you do that, then you can start to find your conversations that you can lean more into. You can find the terminology that people know, because I think also in this tech space, people know different terms so differently now. One word can mean 1,000 different things. Even design, I found a lot of people sometimes refer to design and think about design in engineering because they're so used to not having designers. And so if somebody comes in, like, I've come into teams before where I am used to having designers who are very, who very much have their own role and play a really important role in a team dynamic. When I'm talking with engineers who maybe have never experienced that before, it can feel almost like I'm potentially trying to take away something that somebody else might be doing. So I think you try to approach it carefully. And I think you're going to run into landmines that you don't even realize anyway, just because of the nature of working with different people with different expectations, but just openly communicating. If there's disagreement, finding like a good way, in a nice open way, in a nice, like, bringing tension down, taking out any assumptions, things that people might think that you're thinking, just trying to be as open and honest as possible, and just directly in the moment talking about those things when they come up, that squashes it. You move forward. you build trust, and then you start to really build like almost allyship with people who really might have been your hardest people to win over at the beginning.
Yeah, I love that. I'm just getting in and yeah, everything you said. So I want to pull a little bit of a different thread. You've been doing a lot of design work. You did a lot of things, but to your Air Force role, so I'm going to set the scene and I want you to walk us through what happened. And you know where I'm going. What? Because you had a unique situation that you were in charge of. And so I'm going to set the scene with, it's January 3rd, 2020. A U.S. airstrike kills a top Iranian general, and you get a call to take a team in 2 days to the region to support your product's users. What did you do?
Well, probably to this date, the coolest thing, and I have to thank Adam Furtado for giving me this opportunity, but absolutely the coolest part of my career, hands down. I was in a Trader Joe's. It was post New Year's Eve. And I, at the time, was starting to research just how our customer relationships were going across Kessel Run. I was a Kessel Run at the time. And this, one of our main customers was an air operations center out of Qatar in Al Udeid Air Base. And they were in charge of that region of missions. So when this current event happened, it was a very big deal for our country. It was a very big deal for this specific base. And at the time, they were using our software to plan their missions. And we at Kessel Run were trying to be better about our customer relationships. And so we knew, okay, this is going to be something for them. We want to show them that we care about them, that we care that things are maintained operationally. We had people there, but we didn't have anybody from the program office. And so we said, all right, Rachel, can you go? And I said, sure, this would be awesome. I want to make sure that this stuff is working for them too. And then we took some engineers and went out there to see, mostly just to make sure everything was running, but also get some feet on the ground, getting to really understand how in a time like this, in a real world kind of escalated time like this, how our software was used. So it also ended up being almost one of the best research type trips because we were talking with people, we were interviewing, we were firsthand seeing if something operated differently than how we expected, we could take those notes down and send them over to Boston really quickly. It was almost like it was an interesting model of like how acquisitions and operations can work together in real time to fix things. Because if something happened, we were able to send call Boston up our afternoon, their morning, and we would see it fixed and then be able to go back to the users and say, hey, remember that from this morning? Hey, try it again just to see and watch their faces in real time. Oh, I don't have that issue anymore. That's awesome. I didn't expect that. So excited. Like, we need this stuff. And then we were there for, I think, almost 2 months. So post, we got to see the ramp up. We were there when there were strikes against U.S. military bases. There was a lot that went on in that time period, if people can remember, because it was right before COVID. But it was an amazing time and an amazing way to see how an operator feedback can work, and how if your organization is set up to deliver and in a way to sense things, respond and deliver, that you can see the change and be able to measure it. And we were getting amazing amounts of data at that time, and we hadn't done anything like this before. So it was also, we were going, making it up. I didn't have a handbook to go there. We just hit the ground running, figured out a shift schedule. We wanted to be around 24/7 between the six of us. We figured it out and found ways to check in with users. And we left after the 2 months, starting a continuous rotation that they still have to this day at Kessel Run of product professionals that go out to IED, to our users, to embed with them, to learn for other teams to continue this going, because it was hands down the best type of research we could do and the best type of relationship we could form. So it's cool looking back because it was such a crazy time, but we wrote the handbook. We ended up writing a handbook and then we passed it on, and it's cool to see it continue.
So how do you think we'll take a bigger scope as an Air Force or the defense base as a whole? How do you think it would be different today if every program had this kind of thing, if every tool that was out there had somebody on the ground, if every software had somebody that could speak back to have that, how do you think that would differentiate Concurrent?
Oh my gosh. Our systems would be so different. Our acquisition efforts would be so different because sometimes I don't know where it comes from, but we think we know where the requirements for these systems, and they come from users at one time, but then they leave the operational base and then they go into the acquisition world where they go to the wickets and programs are formed. But if we were embedded with them, learning, taking it on as our own, almost our own mission as the officer or as the airman, enlisted airman there, it's our responsibility to try and make sure that they get what they need because we are seeing it firsthand. We're living it firsthand. We're understanding it firsthand. We would deliver, I think, because the other piece, when we were talking earlier about being in uniform and having that be a different experience, it's also now they know you. Now they see you. You don't want to fail. You don't want to not deliver what they need because you're building this relationship with them where you see the trust that's building that they haven't had before. And you relate because you're also in the Air Force. You're also in this fight. You're also trying to be a part of the spear, the pointy part of the spear. Acquisitions, we always make fun of acquisitions a little bit. And we're like, we're supporting. We're in a supporting role, but we're not at the tip of the spear. We understand that. We get that. When we deploy, we're not necessarily in like operational roles, but when you're there with them, with those operators, and you're seeing the work they're doing, you really feel like you're a part of it. And I think anybody who joined the military, there is a reason why you serve. And if it's to maybe somehow firsthand impact the success of the mission, then that's amazing. That's like the most motivating, driving type of work you could do. People would be motivated to deliver. I think they would deliver. And our capabilities, we would just see probably exponential growth in what we have and what we can do because of it. It would be amazing. Can we start this?
And how do we get that? How do we get that program initiated?
I know.
So is this what that Rachel ever imagined you'd be in, like, when you joined the Air Force? Could you ever think you'd be doing what you're doing now?
Oh, no. I never saw myself in tech. I had such a naive perspective on it that I thought you would have to know how to code. Like, that was where my mind went. For anything software related, I just thought for you to be involved, you had to be an engineer. And I'm fuzziest of fuzzy cadet Rachel Zoll. I was just thinking management. I was just thinking leadership. I was just thinking, how do we try and do the best with what we have? But I never thought that I would end up in the gov tech space. And now that I'm here, there are other types of acquisitions that have the same type of problems that could be solved with a little bit of design thinking. But on the software side, you can just see such a kind of a faster timeline of feedback. You get a faster feedback loop based on your delivery. And I think it's a little bit more exciting. So now looking back, like, I wish I'd looked into this a little bit sooner, but everything happens for a reason.
Sure. So as you transition, how are you wanting to do the same kinds of thing when you, we'll call it, become a civilian, join the dark side?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I think it would be hard to leave the mission of just like supporting government, supporting Department of Defense, especially in a like state with all the experience that I gained. I want to continue to use it. I want to give it back. I want to be able to, if it's either helping specific units in the Air Force, or maybe it's helping other branches, because we're all using something and we're all trying to build it. We're all trying to learn about the best ways to go about some of these programs that might have been around for a while, some of those bigger challenges. Yeah, I definitely want to try and stay in the space while I can. And while this is also still fresh, I just came out of it. I'm technically not out of it just yet, but it's all fresh. This perspective is there. There are organizations that have this drive, but might be lacking the people who have this experience. Then that's exactly what I'm looking for, because I want to help the space be successful.
So related to making the space successful, what advice do you have for someone that wants to get into this kind of thing? Whether they're, let's put an example, let's put a persona around it. Let's say they are a young airman, enlisted or officer, and they hear or see about this and they want to get involved. Is there what advice, training, what do you have in mind?
And are you talking about design in general?
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think so. There's a lot of goodness to coming in with perspective of how things work. I think there's a lot of companies that are looking to support. Maybe they have the backing of, they understand product design or product management or more modern engineering principles. But if you come to them and they're in the space of, let's say, because it's my current work, space and space awareness, space domain awareness. If you have and were an operator in that, but you're interested in maybe learning more about design. One, there's a lot of people in this ecosphere in the Software Factory Coalition of sorts who would be happy to help you get you started. There's lots of free courses, things like that, with some of the basics, which most people already really know. Everyone's a designer at heart. But then finding somewhere where they are looking to use what you already know, because they might not have that, and they might be able to help take and cultivate your skills in that specific practice that you're looking to get into too. I feel like there's a lot of opportunities where it's a give and take, like you're showing up with something. So I would look for the companies that you are in the domain that you know a lot about, if you're looking to stay in that, and then look to see if they have the opportunities for you to grow, opportunities for you to continue to learn. I think those would be some of the best ways to set yourself up in the first stage post-military.
Sure. Thank you for that. And as you've been deep in design and tech for many years now, but you've also been an Air Force officer. And so as you're transitioning, while you'll still be a reservist, you're going to do a little bit different world. What things from the Air Force or from the military service have you learned that you're looking to take to your next thing?
Yeah. So taking the officer route, all of my assignments, even though I got to learn and be an individual contributor on a team, I was asked to lead. I was asked to use the skills that I gained from the Air Force Academy from 4 years, the Leadership Laboratory, take what I learned from being a young officer in Germany, leading contracts, being a young officer in at Hanscom, leading a team to try and work towards solving a specific part of a hardware build. Everything I think I realized comes down to the relationships. My entire career has also been in acquisition. So it also comes down to what your customers need and what your relationship with your customer is like. And I'd like to think I was very good at building those relationships, finding ways to make teams work successfully across different domains, across engineering, across the business side, across the program management piece. And then when it came to software, really starting to translate between engineering and design, because that's a huge component to a successful team. But really making sure that all of that is understood at the end of the day by the customer. Because if they're unhappy, everyone's going to be a little bit unhappy. And I think the skills there that I got to learn from my past experiences, just in really how to communicate well, how to lead teams, and really how to build those relationships and sustain those relationships, is I think what I'm taking with me first. To any of my next projects, I just can't help it. That's just what I look for, I think, when I look at new challenges and new problem spaces.
And you're clearly great at relationships. It's how we met a year ago. It's how you've been pulled into different circles and conversations. Not everyone is naturally gifted at making relationships. What advice do you have there? Like tips or tricks or for people that are like, how do I talk to people? Especially seniors with them.
That's fair. No, I think the things I like about it, I like learning about other people. I like helping people. And I think my advice would be don't think about it as like you need to build this relationship. It needs to be a certain thing. Just go into it trying to learn about somebody, learn about something, learn about them. And as you start to get to know people, then you start to understand maybe how they tick. Then you start to understand where they might have a pain or have a struggle or need help. And then that is really what you start to work with. If there's somebody you're working with, I think I've started that way with everybody. even all of my users too, anybody who I've interviewed in the past or done research with, I just start to get to know them as a person and work from there. It doesn't have to be a whole thing. It can be scary if you've got some research goals or you've got something that you really actually want to achieve from that relationship. But I think the more that you know about them, the more that they feel like you care about them, the more they'll actually be able to help you too.
I love that. Absolutely love that. So this is the part of the show where you get to talk about whatever you want. So what else do you want to hit, cover?
Oh, flash. Do we want to go there? Because we could totally go there. I want design to be a career field.
Okay.
I want it to be something. I say that just because I know we're not going to be able to staff everything ourselves organically. We're always going to want some partnerships with contractors, with service companies. But I want to say there's a lot of talent in the Air Force in general, in all the service branches, I'm sure. Air Force, I just feel like I know our talent better. And there's so much talent. And we lose it. And I just don't think we have to. I think acquisitions can be boring. And I loved it because I found a way for it to be amazing, to be exciting, to be exhilarating. The jobs that we get asked to do sometimes feel like anybody could potentially do them. It feels like it doesn't have to be an officer, somebody who the Air Force has invested money in their education and their leadership training. Sometimes it's just a tasker thing. And I don't know, anybody could do it. But I think specifically people who are really looking to solve problems, any problems in an interesting way. Those innovation officers that get tasked with process improvement, they could be designers. Design can be in software. It can be in your hardware, typical kind of larger acquisition programs. I just hate to see people get trained in these software factories and have nowhere to go. So I think maybe it comes down to that. If we're focusing our design, my design wand, if I had a magic wand or a lamp with a genie and three wishes, I think it would be to give the chief experience officer for the Air Force a budget and staff, because I would have, if this had existed before I was considering what my next assignment would be, I would have gone to DC, worked for him. I would have been hitting the pavement. I would have been doing everything to figure out how do we make this user experience office something for the Air Force. It exists, but it's just lacking a little bit of support. And then I would say, look at these software factories and look at the people there. How do we keep them? They're growing, they're developing things, they're building relationships where they have been broken by our previous acquisitions processes. These are the people you want to keep around. These are the people that are making things better. And if you want them to continue, find them another place to go. So it's not just designer, but that's my soapbox. Oh, I know Austin Bryant. I know he got out. He was somebody that the Air Force lost as well. Still in the space, still doing amazing things, but it used to be his big soapbox too. I just took a design flavor to it because it was my own struggles, but there is something there with talent management. And even I'm hopeful in the reserve side that I'll be able to stay close, find somewhere where I can keep helping in a reserve capacity, not in a reserve capacity. I would volunteer my time because it's sad. It's sad to see people go that are so passionate and you see them come back around. Now they're working for other companies who support, but there's something about being in uniform and being there with the users and being a SME in something as some role that most people don't know about, like product management or design. There's something really powerful about that. So I guess that was my quick little spiel.
Fair enough. That you can talk about whenever you want. So great. Rachel, thank you so much for sharing your story, pieces of your story, and just your journey. It's very clear that you love all things people first, and whether it's in your leadership style and skills or making things better for somebody using a product. So keep doing great work.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. Thank you for being you. And yeah, I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah, fantastic. And anyone that's still listening, if you did not pay attention, Rachel is transitioning. She's looking for her next thing. So maybe if you're like, oh, I love that girl. She's awesome. She had some great skills she talked about. Maybe hit her up. If you can't reach her, hit me up. I'll connect you. And I can promote you as much as I want. It's my show. It's my show. And it's really, thanks for everyone that's still listening. Just like Rachel said, be out there. Whatever you're working on, whatever you're doing, remember to ask the people that are using it. For any market, any job, any career field, the more you ask the people that are using it, the happier they're going to be. And it's going to probably make a better product. So, Rachel, thanks again. And everyone else, be awesome and be the reason someone has an awesome day. We'll talk to you next time.